Chapter 29. The Fate of an Empire. The music was raucous. Fiddlers hacked away at their instruments like woodsmen. Pipers warbled out melodies in counterpoint, and a lone drummer sought little more than to be heard over the whole of it. The dancers were the wealthy children of the Kadrin nobles, brought in by horse, ship, and airship from across the empire, with a mix of beautiful, but less high-bred, companions of both sexes. Kairos picked his way along the outskirts of the debauchery, past servants carrying trays of sweets and wine goblets, past casual trysts, and past older men ogling and envying. It was a study in hedonism, and it was perhaps the only thing that kept Emperor Somek sufficiently amused to ignore the men and women who were the clockwork behind the face of the empire. Kairos smirked to himself at that last realization. There was no clockwork anywhere on Vaedrus, so far as he had seen. In his idle moments, once the war ran itself out of breath, he meant to remedy that, and so many more things. He would become an inventor, he decided. There were feats of metallurgy that the Empire could certainly do well by, as well as oil lamps for the peasantry, modern ship hulls for the aerial fleet, and a civilized form of cooking using proper spices. There were books to be rewritten. There were houses to be built that kept out wind and rain, with glass windows and all. He could put to rest the squinting of old men like Fenris with proper spectacles. He could do it all from things that he knew, and that Brannis could ask and read about. He could picture it all. He would fashion a flying house for himself and Juliana, a workshop of wonders. They would travel the world together, spreading the wonders of Tellurac and his magical hybrid creations. Juliana would have her adventures, and he would have a lifetime of study to fill his brain, even if that lifetime lasted 200 summers. The pleasant thoughts blanketed Kairos's mind and insulated him from the moral horrors he navigated. He needed little attention to his path. He was known well enough, even by drunkards, to clear a pocket ahead of him in any direction he cared to move.
"Ah, Sir Brannis, welcome," Emperor Somek sang, clearly deep within his cups.
His breath stank of wine. Excellent wine, Kairos had little doubt, and his eyes had a glassy sheen over their blue. "You wish to see me, Your Highness?" Kairos bowed his head. He did nothing to hide his ennui, trusting in the wine to hide it for him.
"Brannis, Brannis, my good friend and loyal caretaker of my empire, what do we do to you all day to vex you so? Do you carry a mountain upon those stooped shoulders? Has some cruel vixen driven a spigot into your loins and drained your vitality?"
Somek asked, waving his hands in Kairos's direction as he spoke. His voice carried across half the chamber, despite the music. "I assure you I am well, Emperor Somek," Kairos replied.
"Nonsense, nonsense,"
Somek replied, brushing away Kairos's assurance with his non-drinking hand.
"Brave face is all that is. I command you, sip wine and join in the merriment. I shall not have two grim sentinels circling about my reign, and the other defies me."
"I really had best not drink, Your Highness. It is not safe," said Kairos. He gave a small smile, meant to reassure. It elicited a frown instead.
"None of that now. I have two of the inner circle out there among the revelers,"
Emperor Somek claimed. Kairos looked about and confirmed that there were sorcerers among the courtiers, but not any that were actually inner circle. Kairos chose not to contradict the Emperor on that point. "Your Highness, if they get roaring drunk, there is no chance of them reducing the whole palace to molten rock," Kairos pointed out.
"Fool on yourself, are you? That's the objection you choose?"
Somek asked. "It should suffice, I think," Kairos replied.
"Good,"
Somek replied, screwing one of his inimitable, self-satisfied grins onto his drunken face.
"Pick any lady out there you like. You need not drink with us, but you shall dance."
Kairos glared at Emperor Somek, worrying that he would envision him in flame and see it happen. He could be gone in an instant. One tiny moment's loss of control, Kairos realized, was all that separated the Empire from once again being without an emperor.
"Of course, Your Highness," Kairos responded. He turned and made his way toward the center of the dance floor, all the while able to watch Somik in his ether vision. As he watched, the Emperor yawned. It was the elaborate yawn of a man whose every shift in mood was announced by proclamation. One of the attentive servants scooped up a goblet from Somik's drooping hand. Kyrus caught lewd, inviting glances from many who had heard his exchange with the Emperor. Others were more coy, but no more welcome. Kyrus kept his course, shutting out his vision of the light as he pointedly ignored all attention. He waited until he was sure that Somik had drifted off to sleep in his throne, then continued walking straight out the doors. The last thing Somik saw before his magically induced nap was Sir Brannis Solaran, dutifully obeying his command. The chess room was a quiet place to think, even while in the midst of a game,
even while an opponent sat across the board from you.
Kyrus looked at his pieces and at Rashan's. Since his revelation that Rashan was playing an Akkadian style of chess, Kyrus felt much more secure in his assessment of the positions he took against the demon. Still, he weighed carefully each move he made. "You know, if this game is not decided before word comes of Jinzan Fair's attack, I will be the one to go," Rashan said, breaking a silence which had been long enough for Kyrus to have eaten a meal, which he had. Kyrus looked up, then back at the board. The demon's presence focused his thoughts, made his musings less an abstract thing. Rashan was so simple to dismiss as a monster, a demon, in the storybook sense, when he was not around. In the flesh, he was personable, witty, challenging, and a wellspring of information when he chose to share it. A twitch from one of his knights drew Kyrus's attention.
The little carved marble piece turned its head to look up at him,
blinking baleful eyes. The edge of one of his pawns rose and fell in rhythm, while the rest of the base lay flat on the board. Was it tapping its foot? "You know I can see you doing that," Kyrus scolded his opponent. Kyrus relented and moved his bishop. It was a move he had decided on some time ago. It was also a move that was subtly flawed. It was meant to provoke an exchange of attacks, rather than attack and defense. But that was not the flaw. The flaw was that it would fall one move short of victory, if Rashan countered properly. Kyrus had carefully assured himself that he was choosing a play that was consistent with his style, but not the best move he could find.
"Something is on your mind besides this game," Rashan noted. "Is it that spat you had with Somik this afternoon?"
"I suppose I ought not ask how you knew about that. It just vexes me to think that we are subject to the whims of that fop. I had to remove myself from his presence before I killed him. Do you realize how close we came to needing to scrounge the dung pits for another heir?" Kyrus asked. "It dawned on me how easy it would be, without even meaning to. Just a moment's loss of poise and poof."
Kyrus closed his hand and sprang it open, pantomiming an explosion.
"And thus did the young sorcerer know the pains of a crazy old demon, eh?" Rashan replied. The warlock scoffed. "I get that feeling constantly. There are so few competent anythings around here. I'm vexed on all sides by ignorance, stupidity, and duplicity. Thank the winds that rarely does the latter come without an ample serving of the former two. You worry about Somik. For me, nearly everyone dangles over a pit of knives."
"Should I worry?" Kyrus asked. He tried to keep the question lighthearted.
"You?" Rashan shook his head. "I spend much of my free time alone with my thoughts. I seek you out because you try my patience with less vigor than most, and occasionally provide some insight I lacked. I also weigh the thought that you would be more than a trifling fancy to kill." The warlock reached across the table and gave Kyrus a swift, backhanded slap to the shoulder. Kyrus's shielding spell shrugged the blow off. Rashan moved his rook out of the path Kyrus had just threatened with his bishop. The game was slipping down the path to Rashan's victory, and another day of avoiding the honor of confronting Jinzan Fair.
"Just want to hear it once again. Is that so much to ask?" Juliana shouted. She had spent the day in the captain's harness,
and was in no mood for willfulness.
They sat in the sparse galley of the starlit marauder, floating above the clouds, sharing a late meal.
"I gave my word once. It shall suffice," Tebow replied, an uncustomary anger in his tone. "I am not some street-corner piper to be bluffed and bullied into changing his story. My honor and my blade, they are the only claims I have to this world, or the other."
"You just keep getting this look in your good eye whenever I see you looking at him," Juliana pressed.
"You see that look because you imagine it there," Tiba replied. "I am holding to my part of the bargain. You should listen to the screaming inside your heart. It is the call of your conscience. Should you let my people fall once more under the blade and spells of that creature, you have to convince him to confront Roshan. By every account I hear, he is the embodiment of destruction when he chooses to be. Let him choose a noble cause."
"It is hard to argue that every day he spends preparing makes him a little bit more likely to prevail. The worst thing that can happen is that he fails," Juliana argued.
"The worst thing?" Tiba asked. "For you, perhaps. For Safshan, I think, not trying at all is worse."
"Brannis thinks he might be able to tame Roshan. He thinks he might just need to have someone who can tell him no when he oversteps reason," Juliana said, her voice fading. "He's starting to worry that he might slide down the same dark path that took Roshan, or Talax, or who knows how many other sorcerers who stood mightiest in their day."
"So that is your true worry," Tiba said. "You worry both that he might lose and that he might win."
"Good night, Tiba," Juliana said. She left the remains of her dinner cold and retired to her cabin.